Welcome to the Better Boards podcast series. Our mission at Better Boards is to provide proven solutions for creating more effective boards. Our evidence-based board evaluations and board development programs deliver tangible results. To fulfill our mission, we listen and give a voice to all who care about creating better boards. Every time you tune in, we'll help you to develop and reinvigorate your board know-how and practice with insights, data, and practical advice. All the views expressed in our podcast are the views of our podcast partners and not those of Better Boards. I'm delighted and honored that for this episode, Professor Amy Edmondson from Harvard Business School is joining us. Amy Edmondson is a Novartis Professor of Leadership and Management at the Harvard Business School, a chair established to support the study of human interaction that lead to the creation of successful enterprises that contribute to the betterment of society. Amy has been recognized by the biannual Thinkers 50 Global Ranking of Management Thinkers in 2011, 2013, 2015, and 2017, and was honored with the Talent Award in 2017. She studies teaming, psychological safety, and leadership, and her articles have been published in numerous academic and management outlets. Amy's work on psychological safety has been groundbreaking and is the subject of this podcast. Amy, it's a fantastic honor that you join us for this podcast. I'm delighted to speak with you about your main subject, psychological safety.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and I'm extremely pleased to be speaking with you, Sabina.
So you did groundbreaking research on psychological safety, and you actually coined the term psychological safety. Can you maybe explain to our listeners what psychological safety actually is?
Certainly, and let me correct the coinage just slightly. The term psychological safety was already in the literature. It had been put there by Warren Bennis and Ed Schein in the 60s. In classic research on organizational change, and they had the insight that people needed a sense of psychological safety to feel capable of engaging in organizational change. And I coined the term team psychological safety by observing that psychological safety varies significantly across groups within the same organization. Now, let me explain what it is, because I don't think the term itself conveys it very well. And I think I would have been smarter to use a different term. But it's now out there. Everybody's using it, so too late to change the term. But the way I would like to explain psychological safety is as follows. It is a sense of felt permission, you know, experienced permission for candor. When you are in a psychologically safe work group, you feel it is absolutely possible and desirable to speak up honestly with what's on your mind, whether that be criticism, crazy idea, a question, a request for help, or even an acknowledgement of a failure. All of those things seem to be fair game to you because you're, you know, primarily aware that these things matter for doing a good job.
I can see that. And why do you believe that psychological safety is so vital in today's working environment?
Well, you know, I think two real reasons, and actually they're quite closely related. The first is, with the increased complexity and speed of change that is affecting every organization today, things are moving so fast and sometimes such unexpected ways that literally anyone might see or have an idea that's really important, and really important to hear it now, right? Not to sort of wait until it's an easier time to raise it or bring it up. So just the complexity of the environment and the complexity of the work we do means that anyone's voice might be mission critical. And we need to hear it. We need to hear it now. The second, and of course, closely related reason is innovation is at a premium today. And innovation happens in a psychologically safe workplace, full stop.
And yet, from the work I do with boards and the board evaluations I conduct, I hear so often that people don't feel what you describe and don't dare to speak up. Can you talk a little bit? It actually matters so much in the boardroom.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. Well, you know, in the boardroom, at least theoretically, very important, very strategic decisions and reviews are being conducted. In other words, the stakes are high. The outcomes of decisions and conversations that happen in the boardroom may affect an organization for years into the future. So some of them are even irreversible, right? So the stakes are high. And when the stakes are higher, the requirement for candid voice is greater. So we can see theoretically why this matters so much. Now, I don't want everyone listening to feel a sense of embarrassment that they might not have that in place yet, because let's face it, that's the norm. But the norm, and I can explain why, but the norm is that people don't have psychological safety. In the absence of real effort to build it, it's often not there. And the primary reason why it's not there is relates to our species. You know, the human being is a creature who's quite aware of interpersonal risk. We very much care about what others think of us. We very much want to remain part of important in-groups. You know, the membership in especially high-status groups is supremely valued by us. And we worry. You know, we spontaneously worry. Now, most of what I'm just saying isn't necessarily conscious. It's not that you're sort of thinking, well, gee, if I spoke up now, I might get kicked out of this high-status group. Not at all. But just below conscious awareness, we are tiptoeing. We're watching our step. We're reading the tea leaves rather than being absolutely mission-focused, leading us to be willing to take the kinds of interpersonal risks we have to take to do excellent work. So it's normal for boards to have low psychological safety. It's optimal for them to have high psychological safety. You know, it's funny because many people I talk to, you know, I often talk to mid-level managers or even frontline employees, and their impression is, and it's wrong, but their impression is that the higher you go, the more confident you feel speaking up. It's just not true. In fact, in some organizations, it's quite profoundly not true. I won't go so far as to say it's the opposite, but I will say that the higher you go, the more the stakes are higher, the more you don't want to be kicked out of your perch. And so it's quite normal for boards to have a climate where people tiptoe.
And absolutely, I can absolutely confirm this. This is what I'm seeing all the time in my work with board evaluations. So how can chairs actually do to overcome this?
You know, the first thing they need to do is name it. And when I say name it, I mean name the issue. I don't mean psychological safety. It doesn't matter to me whether people use that term or all. But name the reality, meaning call out early and often that we together face uncertainty and complexity. Whenever a group faces uncertainty and complexity, anybody's voice might have that hidden gem that makes all the difference. So you're describing reality, you're setting the frame, as it were, as a frame in which voices are a gift, not an intrusion, not an imposition. So you say, you know, you sort of start and you frame the meeting, you frame the session as a problem-solving, strategic decision-making, strategic review session, whatever it is. And you remind people that what's at stake is the future of the company. And so that's the framing. The second thing any board chair can do, and I would argue must do, is ask good questions. And a good question is defined as follows. It focuses us on something that matters. So a good question would not be, hey, how's it going? A good question is, what are your thoughts about the product X launch, right? And good questions generally come in one of two categories, the kind that help us go deeper, what leads you to think so, what data do you have, what have you seen, where does that work, and then the kind that help us go broader. What are we missing? What other options might we consider? And who has a different view, right? So those kinds of questions. Now, an additional, especially if you know that somebody might have done a fair amount of thought about something, or if you know that someone has particular subject matter expertise in something, use their name. So for instance, you know, Sabina, can you give me your thoughts about board effectiveness? Now, when I do that, it becomes very awkward for you to remain silent. Let's say the default state is silent. When I ask you a direct question, and especially when I use your name, you feel a tremendous obligation to speak up. And so instantly, by using that device of a good question, I've created space for your voice. I've created permission for your candor, best I can. And then finally, chairs have to do a very good job of responding in what I call a productive manner. And a productive manner is defined as fundamentally appreciative. Yeah, it doesn't. I don't have to like what you said, but I have to kind of appreciate and respect that you said it. And number two, a productive response is forward-looking. There are often times where we must do a post-mortem. We must take a look at what went wrong and why. But an initial response to a report of a problem or a crazy idea should always be forward-looking, meaning, how can we help? Or what might we do about this? Or where should we go next? Right? Because that's a habit of mind that boards should have anyway, right? That we're fundamentally interested in the future. Where we sometimes do have to find and take action and discipline people, but that ought to be the exception, not the rule. The rule is we're here to create a better future.
Wow, so true. Now, switching over from the chair to the non-executives, you know, when I attend panel events, and there are many of this in London, everyone talks about that non-executive directors should ask challenging questions, and dutifully they respond on a panel that they all ask challenging questions. But behind closed doors, I'm hearing that people struggle to do that.
Yes. And that, again, is very human, right? Because, again, people are brought up most of the time to be polite, to be respectful, and we erroneously conflate a challenging question with rudeness, which of course it isn't, especially not when done skillfully. But so I think that for directors to be willing to contribute value by asking, say, a challenging question, they need to remind themselves and possibly each other to frame a challenging question as a gift. You know, the old saying, a stitch in time saves nine. A challenging question is a stitch in time. If I challenge this thinking right now, yeah, it's a little bit of an inconvenience, and maybe it wasn't entirely welcome, and it might save us vast amounts of time and money later.
But you described a couple of minutes ago, I'm seeing so many times in practice, people are so desperate almost to belong to this elite group.
Yes.
Yeah, and they don't want to rock the boat, particularly, if I may say so, the British.
Funny. It's a conundrum, because we will not succeed in any endeavor requires us to assume that human beings are different in their nature than they are. But I think as long as we're willing to discuss it, you know, make it discussable, and sometimes I think it's funny. It's a kind of a source of humor. Right? We're all still in elementary school wanting to be picked on the playground, and yet our more mature, thoughtful superegos can realize that this isn't about me. You know, it's about us, and it's about the future. And, I mean, I think we're more willing to do things like this when they're framed and responded to as if it was a gift, which isn't your first instinct, but take a deep breath. And then thank you, right? Mm-hmm. Thank you for that clear line of sight. Or we're going to roll up our sleeves and do something that's difficult but important. We're going to go around and say what's wrong with this proposal. We're going to do what we sometimes call a pre-mortem. Right? I think this is a great idea for the company, but let's just for fun, right? Let's imagine it's, you know, 3 months from now or whatever the proper time frame, and this went desperately wrong. What might have been the source of that unlikely outcome? Face it, we don't believe that's a likely outcome, but just to warm up, just to practice, let's be creative. You know, what could we have missed? What are the assumptions we're making now that might be problematic? You can think of it, if you will, as a training exercise rather than as a real discussion, but just to kind of keep our brains and group processes flexible and vital, let's try it. Make it an exercise, as it were.
Brilliant. And how do boards find the space for it? Because quite often, you know, they come together for dinner, the agendas are completely full,
They rattle through the agenda. It sounds like that this takes space, time.
Yes and no, right? It does take time, but it's time. It's rather than taking time, it's investing time. And that, too, is a reframe. I cannot tell you how many decisions I have studied that went badly wrong and cost the company between hundreds of thousands to hundreds of millions, and 15 more minutes of candid discussion could literally have avoided the error. So I think we err in a, you know, in an uncertain, complex world. It's simply not the case. You know, we're not on linear time. It's not that a minute here is a minute there. So it's really a matter of good agendas, good process. Good process doesn't actually take longer than bad process. Beating around the bush is a huge time sink in many board discussions. Being direct can take less time. I'm not saying make sure every voice is heard on every issue, even if they have nothing to add. I'm saying let's make sure we haven't just fallen prey to groupthink, where people had something substantive to add, but it didn't get added because of those human foibles that we all have of wanting to be accepted or not wanting to slow the group down or what have you. So we've got to reframe that one as an investment in good process, good discussion. That's what we're paid for. Let's do it right.
And if our listeners now think, wow, that makes all so much sense, and it's exactly what's happening in our board, can we leave maybe three concrete action items so that they can get started to make their board a more psychologically safe place to be?
Well, forgive me for this, but I will say read the book, The Fearless Organization, which came out earlier this year, because it's full of some tips, but more importantly, it's full of two full chapters of organizational failures that were preventable had people been more direct and candid. And those are chilling, right? Because those are, some of them are headlines with scandal, some of them are simply a great loss of revenue, and some of them are, in fact, loss of life. So when you really appreciate the responsibility you hold and let yourself imagine the future as not some, you know, hypothetical, it's always going to work out the way we say, but a future that actually exists in a world with complexity and uncertainty, you stand up straighter, you take yourself seriously, you take the responsibility of the group more seriously, and you say, let's do whatever we can, what's humanly possible to get this right. I will say that what you and I have been talking about is not natural, meaning it's not going to spontaneously happen one day in your board without leadership. So that makes leadership crucial. And when I say leadership, I don't necessarily mean the person at the top of the hierarchy. I mean anyone can exercise leadership, although it helps if you're in a position of authority, CEO, et cetera. But anyone can say, hold on, let's sit back to consider what's at stake here. And maybe a process of, you know, going around and ensuring that we haven't missed something before we take a risk would be valuable right now. That's leadership. So sort, I think probably the most important advice is sort between those things that really, really are routine. We do not need to over discuss where the holiday party will be held. It doesn't matter. We do need to over-discuss the hiring of a very senior executive, the choice of a chief executive, the launch of a radical new product, the opening of a new market or acquisition of a company, right? So the kinds of things that will be with us for months or years to come are going to be the ones where we're going to practice together. Let's just use this as a, you know, practice field. We're going to practice together the art of best quality decision-making.
Fantastic. Amy, I could have not imagined a better kickoff for the podcast series into the year 2020. Thank you so much for your insights into your groundbreaking work and the invaluable insights for boards. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
That was brilliant, Amy. Absolutely.
Aren't you kind?
No.
Well, you had good questions, and I can just visualize these groups, you know, around these big tables, there's something tragic about not taking advantage of that opportunity to be the very best they can be.
Absolutely. And I tell you something, I think if we don't resolve the issue now, what's happening in the boardrooms, we will see more corporate failures. But also, I think the next generation will think, why do we need these boards in the first place?
That's a good point, right?
Yeah?
Right, when if they miss it all the time, if they fail to add value, fail to prevent the preventable, then you're absolutely right.
No, that was brilliant. You know, I'm a huge fan of your work. I would love and I will actively look out for opportunities. Happy to discuss it with one of your team members.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Fantastic. Brilliant. I hope that one day we can meet in person.
Likewise. I'm sure we will.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful Christmas time.
You too.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
As a note for your diary, new episodes are available every first and third Thursday of the month. Subscribe on Apple or Google Podcasts to never miss an episode. We love to hear from you. If you would like to contribute to a future podcast or attend our popular breakfast conversations and receive regular updates on our activities, you can reach us on info@better-boards.com.